The combination of art is a wonderful and fascinating thing that's interesting to talk about, sometimes tricky to talk about, but where I think art really happens when it comes together. And I think that's probably the case with an exhibition that's been at Spokane Falls Community College for about a month. It's only there for another week, and it's called Tales of the American, and it culminates very much in a couple of events today at 11:30 today at SFCC, then at the MAC this evening, this late afternoon at 4:30 for a presentation about the film that goes with the exhibition, or maybe it's the exhibition which goes with the film. And it doesn't matter that I don't know, because the people that know are certainly here to talk about it. Stephen Seemeyer, who directed the film, and Pamela Wilson, who wrote the film, and they can correct me on that, because I think probably it really is the two of you are the film. Is that about the right way to say it?
Yes.
Okay, let's open with you, Pamela. Of where the idea... Well, first, let's... what is the American? From either of you, what is the American? Because I didn't even put the other word on what goes after American.
Okay. The American Hotel...
There you go.
...is a four-story brick building, a very modest building in the Arts District, what's now the Arts District of downtown Los Angeles. And in 1980... It became a place where a lot of artists moved in. There were a few people that had lived there from the 50s, like it was sort of a flop house before that. And in 1980, it became an artist place where it was a community of artists that all lived there and in surrounding lofts and buildings around the area. But it's just this place that is... a special place. Everybody who ever lived there feels like it was the most special place they ever lived. It was a place where anything went, where you could do anything you wanted. There was no supervision. There was just complete freedom.
Art could happen.
Art could happen. Art happened all the time. And on the ground floor, there was a bar that became famous, world famous, as a punk rock venue called Al's Bar. And bands from all over the world played there, including Nirvana and Red Hot Chili Peppers, Black Flag, X, Los Lobos, everybody. Los Lobos actually even pretty much got its start there back in 1980. And so that's what the American Hotel is. And so we decided, my husband and I, you want to tell the story of how you decided to make this?
Yeah. And let's introduce Stephen Seemeyer, who is the other half of the duo that really made this film, because I'm sure you each did about 23 jobs involved with the film. So Stephen, what made you, gave you the idea to make a film there about it?
Well, somewhere around 2011, 2012, I was sitting with a friend of mine who lives in the Arts District named Raymond Newton. And Raymond had lived in the American Hotel. And I told him, I said, I can tell the Arts District is now changing. They've just named it the Arts District. And that's...
Is that dangerous?
That's very dangerous. Once an area gets that name, it's things change. Big money moves in, and they want to capitalize on that. And unfortunately, the rents go so high that the artist can no longer sure. live there. And I said, we need to go in right now. And I said, I'd like to interview people, like 10 people from the 70s, 10 people from the 80s, 10 people from the 90s. So we kind of drew up on a napkin there at the coffee shop a list of about 40 people from four different decades. And I said, I'm going to go home and talk to my wife about this. And because I think the story here is incredible about this whole community that for about 30 years, there was a vibrant both visual community, musical community, writers and poets lived in the hotel. I said, before this is gone, before this completely changes, we need to get in there and get this story, get their stories. We have to before it's gone, before people, they're literally dying off. And So I went home and I pitched the idea.
You talked to your wife, and it so happens that your wife, Pamela, had a unique perspective on the place and maybe even more than a little bias about it.
Very much so, because I moved into the American Hotel when I was an art student at Otis Art Institute in 1980, the first year that it was an artist colony type place. It changed my entire life. I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, which is like the ultimate suburbia. And the only thing I wanted was to live in a place where people could be artists without having to explain why. So I moved down there. I was 23, and my mother thought I was insane. And downtown LA was a very forbidding place at the time. It was mostly people went there to work in the daytime, and then at night it was completely deserted. And so it was just a strange and desolate kind of place at that time in 1980. It's changed a lot since then. But then while I was living at the hotel, I got a job as a bartender at Al's Bar, and I also ruled the pool table at Al's Bar. And one night Steve came in. I didn't know him at the time, but he came in and we met at Al's Bar.
So, boy, the plot is quickly deepening because it sounds like you had no choice but to make this film once the idea came along.
That's correct.
For all the reasons and probably many more that you'll tell us.
One of the key elements, which we haven't stated yet, was that because it was so desolate and because it was so abandoned, it was incredibly cheap. And when I mean cheap, it was 3 cents a square foot. One of the studios, I had two studios. I had an entire hotel, a 16-room hotel that I lived in, 16 rooms and a lobby for $150 a month. And I could turn one into a sound studio, one into an editing room, one into a projection room. I mean, each room had a different function, and I had another room to sleep in. But I had another painting studio on Seton Street, several blocks away, and that was a 10,000 square foot studio on the third floor of an old fruit packing warehouse, and that was $75 a month. Now, it was so long, the studio was so long, that when the phone would start ringing at one end of the studio, I would have to start running to get it before the fifth ring. So there were these enormous, beautiful, old spaces that you could do as a painter. You could do a whole body of work in essentially a monster space and for very cheap. And I had that for about 5 years, that studio. And unfortunately, it's no longer like that at all.
Well, of course not.
And that was the key thing that drew a lot of artists, thousands of artists, down to downtown, was that enormous large spaces for really, really cheap. In fact, I knew that when I got the hotel for $150 a month, that if I didn't sell a drawing or if I didn't make any money that month, I knew I could spend a day putting on garden gloves and going over and unloading a produce truck, and I could make my rent in one day. And that was the attraction of being there. You were willing to brave all the crazy elements, all the crazy people, the bums, the winos, the street people, you'd be willing to put up with that because you had a very large space. You could do whatever you wanted to in it. And that was the attraction to downtown.
Steve C. Mayer and Pamela Wilson about this film created on the American Hotel, the film called Tales of the American. So then, Pamela, you were describing to me earlier, it was, well, and you just did too, that it was a matter of finding a good cross-section of people that I presume were generally the artists who lived there to interview about their experiences with the hotel. So, you know, within the 15 minutes we have here, an example of two or three of amazing stories that you were told.
Well, there is a woman named Jet Jackson, who is a painter. She no longer lives in California, but she at one time or another lived in many different studios in the American Hotel, and she was sort of a heart and soul type person of the hotel, and she had a lot of great stories to tell about being there during earthquakes and about how she would be in her room and just all these musicians from other rooms in the building would just all congregate out in the hallway and go into her room and just play music all night long. And that was the whole attitude. When I moved in, that was the attitude. All the doors were always just open and people just moved from one room to another to talk about art and to talk about poetry and to talk about where you're going to eat that night, which there weren't a lot of choices for that in that area. But it was a real communal feeling for most people. And then there were people like George Zarvis, who was he was sort of the custodian of the building. He had lived there since 1961, and he was a real character. He looks like somebody from a film noir movie. And he looked like somebody from a film noir movie. He was very much older than all the rest of us, so he was sort of like our grandpa. And he had lived there so long that he would come out into the hallway and he'd tell us all, "Now you be quiet. You stop running down the hallways." And he would try to contain people, but it didn't work.
Well,
and then he'd go back into his room and...
You wanted to come in on that, Steve?
The interesting thing about George was that he had arrived from back east and had come to Los Angeles and was part of a three-man robbery team. He was the wheelman for a stick-up crew that would go and rob gas stations and liquor stores in South Central Los Angeles. And they would wear suits and ties, and this was back in the 50s. And they would go down South Central Avenue, and they would go to a gas station, and the two men, he would be in the wheel, he would be driving the car, and his two partners would go in wearing suits and ties and pull their guns and ask for the money. But there were no bullets in the guns, because if you got caught with bullets in the guns in a stick-up, the sentence was longer. And they did this. And in fact, they had robbed so many liquor stores and gas stations in a predominantly black area of Los Angeles that it was getting very hot for them. And the three of them lived in an apartment in the Westlake area. And he told me that one day the other two decided they wanted to get more money and rob a bank. And he didn't want to do it. He didn't want to take his two partners to rob the bank, but they were more forceful and they insisted upon it. And he went to Fourth and Spring to a Bank of America, or might have been the Bank of Italy at that time, and he pulled up front and kept the motor warm, and they went inside with their guns, and this time there were bullets in the guns. And he got so scared of what the repercussions were for this, of robbing a bank, that he took off and he went east down 4th Street all the way to the area where the American Hotel was. And he abandoned the car in the vicinity of the American Hotel, and he shacked up with a woman that he had met in the vicinity that he knew that the other two men didn't know about. And he never even came back. He doesn't know what happened to the two guys that he left in the lurch in the bank. He just took off. And he hid out with her, and he eventually married her. And until there was a fire in the building that he was in, the hotel he was in, and he moved across the street into the American Hotel in
1961.
But he had these stories to tell me, and there were other very strange stories that he told me of the Depression and coming from Heidelberg, Pennsylvania, as a hobo on the trains to Los Angeles in the 30s, in the late 30s. So
that's a pretty great example of the kind of characters that you had. And how many characters, how many people did you interview for this?
We interviewed more than 140. I believe the number is 149, but I'm not sure of the exact number, but it's 148 or 149. And that's not all just people that lived in the hotel. That we also interviewed people that lived in buildings around the hotel or had businesses in the hotel. Mm-hmm. Like we interviewed the woman who now owns the Corner Market. The Corner Market, there's a market on the corner that has been a lot of different kinds of businesses over the years. And the woman who lives there now, I mean, who works there, who owns it now, we interviewed her. But then we also interviewed the son of the man who ran that market from 1942 until 1980. So, you know, we interviewed a lot of different people associated with the hotel or the neighborhood. And it's really, the hotel is the focal point because it has an incredible history, but it's also
it was the first
sort of
hotel.
The example of the gentrification of right. the arts district.
Sure, and we'll talk a little bit more in a minute about the gentrification. But yeah.
Well, the hotel was originally built as the first hotel for black people, and it was literally
in
Los Angeles, and it literally says the first hotel that to have first class accommodations for Negroes. That's what the Los Angeles Times article says in 1905, and so it was a complete. It was one of the first black areas of Los Angeles, and then it gradually shifted to become a large Japanese community, an extension of Little Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And then after when World War II started, the hotel literally in a 2-week period emptied out of all the Japanese occupants.
Sure.
And then because of the wartime jobs and the Great Migration, the entire community became black again and was called Bronzeville instead of Little Tokyo. And then after the war was over, that shifted back to being a Japanese community. But right where the American Hotel was, it had run down so much in the 50s and 60s that artists started to sure. gravitate toward the area.
Because it was cheap. And then hence the 1980 and the beginning of that. Now, I have kind of a cart and horse question about you, because you had 140 interviews, and then you were determined to tell the story of the hotel. How much did you think ahead where you were going to end up, and how much did those interviews send you into some sort of greater conclusion?
Yes, absolutely. When we were, I would say maybe into 100 interviews, we also started to discover the deep past of when it was built, the people that built the hotel originally. We started to discover that it was one of the first black areas of Los Angeles. And why? Because of covenants, codes, and restrictions. And then we started to dig deeper.
Yeah, the interviews shaped the direction that this narrative took. And not obviously with 149 people in a 106-minute movie, you're not going to get everybody in it. So we have another project that we're working on now to edit each person's interview into like a 15 or 20-minute oral history. And then we're posting that on our website and also on YouTube, Tales of the American channel on YouTube, where all of the 149 people will be represented on that channel for each of their interviews will be included on that as an oral history so that nobody, you know, nobody will feel left out. And also because it's going to be an interesting repository of what the arts district went through to get to where it is now.
It was a building that was built for a marginalized section of our society in Los Angeles, and then became a haven for another marginalized section of society, the Japanese, and then became a haven for, it's like it was the building for the other. I call it the building for the other. And that, you know, when it finally ended up being a building for artists, and it thankfully had that period of time for about 35 years. Now it's, I would call it, instead of the arts district and an arts building, I would call it the tourist district.
Right.
And people come in to buy ice creams and then go home to other places.
Yeah, so that's kind of the final. First, quickly, it's I need to say it's Stephen C. Meyer and Pamela Wilson who put this created the film Tales of the American about the American Hotel. If you're in Los Angeles, if you're just joining us, and in a couple of minutes, I'll tell you where and when they're heard later today. But describe the gentrification process and how it made that transition, and whether gracefully or gracelessly.
Well, the process, there were many attempts to start something more gentrified throughout the 40 years since 1980. In 1980, I mean, when the artists started moving in, I'm sure the people that already lived in the hotel thought we were the guys that were gentrifying their neighborhood. So gentrification is something of a, you know, a relative term.
Right.
But we had, through the 1980s and the 1990s, and up until 1992, there started to be galleries and other restaurants and all the, you know, money moving into the town, into the area of downtown. People started, you know, building really chic loft apartments. They were still big ones, but they were more expensive. And the money started coming in. And then in 1992, we had this thing called the LA riots, and that stopped it in its tracks. And so then gentrification kind of stopped completely for a while. Mm-hmm. And then slowly over the next decade, it started building up again. But by, I'd say, 2005, around there, it was still pretty raw downtown. And then but you could see the change happening when, you know, a designer sausage place opened across the street from the hotel. And when a place is selling like $5 hot dogs, then you know that that's different. That's not mm-hmm. the same. Instead of the 50-cent bologna mm-hmm. sandwiches that we would get at the yeah. market on the corner. So that's it started slowly, and it had a few starts and stops along the way, but then now it's full blown.
But the artists weren't instantly pushed out. You were telling
they
me
were
earlier.
Not. There's yeah. still artists in the arts district. Not very many of them.
Well, they are clinging on to old leases and spaces that
A few people were really smart and bought their places in the 80s, mm-hmm. so they own their buildings that they're in. So there are some artists still there, and now. I suppose there's a kind of artist there because a lot of movie people, actors, and people that work on films are moving in, and musicians and stuff like that. But the average, you know, poor artist like us who went to Otis Art Institute and didn't make it in a gallery situation, you can't really afford to be there anymore.
There is a buzz and a liveliness that occurs when you have a lot of people that are walking around that are working artists. Yeah. That's not there anymore.
Of course.
There also was a very active performance art scene down there at that time, in the 80s and 90s. There was performance art every single day, everywhere, in the streets, in people's lofts, in other spaces. It was a much more experimental type artwork that you can't really monetize.
The film is Tales of the American, and there's also the exhibition of some artists involved, and we don't have time really to talk about that. You'll just have to go see that. The exhibition has been at SFCC for the last month and is there for another week. And then the two creators of the film that I've just been talking to, Pamela and Stephen, are in town. And at 11:30 today, they speak at SFCC. And then at 4:30 at the Museum of Arts and Culture will be a showing of the film, and they'll be speaking after the showing of that film. So it's two ways to get really involved with this fascinating project about arts and real estate and civilization and all kinds of things. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vern. Yeah. It was nice to meet you.
So this is pretty exciting. So that is, again, 11:30 today at SFCC, and then 4:30 at the MAC for those two events today.